All right, welcome everybody. I have 6:01. It is evening on the East Coast. So I'm going to get started. You guys feel free. The first, there's really two goals we have tonight. So I recognize some, but not all the names on here. I presume there's some new fellowship directors or associate fellowship directors, possibly some clinical competency committee members that are not fellowship directors. But anyway, you're all welcome. Really, I want to do two things tonight. One is update people on what's been going on with milestones, EPAs, and the potential for future standardized evaluation tools that can build on what's been done previously. And the second is to have an open discussion about how to make said tools optimal for learners, importantly, easy to take care of the administrative burden of ADS reporting twice a year. As I see a couple people coming in, I'll just introduce myself. My name is Lowell Frank. I'm the past president of the SPC TPD. I think I have about 9 more days left on the board. I'm actually quite sad to be leaving. Along with a number of actually great people I see on this Zoom, worked on the Milestones 2.0 and the EPA mapping. Like I said, you guys can feel free to sit back when we move into the discussion phase. I'd love to see everybody's face. If you want to turn on your cameras then, that'd be fine. If you want to do it sooner, that's great too. But I hope we can all learn from each other in how we're moving forward, making all of these requirements meaningful. All right, so I'm going to start with milestones update. I hope this is mostly review. So during the academic year 2022 to 2023, maybe a little before that, the ACGME started working on the revised pediatric subspecialty milestones. So the revised Gen Peds milestones were even a year before that. Those went into operation in July of 2022. What we were tasked with right after that was really we were forced to inherit all of their extra clinical. They're not non-clinical, but the extra clinical ones. Systems-based practice, practice-based learning improvement, interpersonal and communication skills, and professionalism. So those 4 domains totaled 16 sub-competencies that we had to use. Actually, it was 15. We didn't have a choice in those. And what we were tasked with doing was coming up with new pediatric cardiology-specific patient care and medical knowledge. I was a member of the great group working on this. Julie Glickstein, who's here, was there. David Werho, who was there. Probably some others. I'm sorry if I left you out. So we came up with 4 patient care subcompetencies. I'm going to use sort of subcompetencies and milestones interchangeably. 3 medical knowledge ones. And then we inherited 6 systems-based practice, 2 practice-based learning and improvement, 4 professionalism, and 3 interpersonal and communication skills. And we added a 4th one. We'll get there shortly. This was the group. I see Ellen from Vanderbilt just joined us. And again, we had fellow representation. Andrew was a fellow at the time. Brian was a fellow at the time. Trisha was a fellow at the time. It was actually a really nice process. I want to spend a little time on the details of the patient care and the medical knowledge. The first thing I'll say is that even the SBP professionals and whatever, in my opinion, are vastly superior to Milestones 1.0. They are less esoteric, they are more understandable, and importantly, they are shorter. But the patient care and medical knowledge ones I've listed here, you can see here, clinical reasoning for diagnosis, and what are the milestone levels we're rating our learners on? And then management. We had a vigorous debate about whether diagnosis and management should be 1 milestone or 2. Not that they are not different skills, but was there, you know, the feeling that maybe if you're good at one, you're probably good at the other. In the end, we decided to keep them 2 things, and we have the levels there. And then organization and prioritization of patient care. We all liked having this one there. This was our choice. And then finally, transthoracic echo. There is some asymmetry. Echo is in patient care, but cath EP and I'm actually forgetting cath EP and I'm going to cheat. Oh, and knowing stuff about congenital heart disease is medical knowledge. And it's sort of arbitrary. Nobody really cares which domain they're in. really what you're assessing is what matters. And the distinction was that echo is really psychomotor, because we do expect our learners to do an echo in addition to knowing things about echo and writing reports and things like that. So it was determined that this one goes in patient care. You could see for echo, though, we sort of split up essentially doing an echo versus using echo as medical knowledge and interpretation and synthesizing it in terms of patient care. So we do sort of divide that up. Yes, we get you could be really good at scanning and not so good at interpreting, but if you there's no end to how much you can split. So we just decided, like, make it one. And if somebody's really good at this and maybe not so good there, you kind of split the difference. For medical knowledge, this first one was in response to Milestones 1.0. Didn't ask a single thing in line of, do you know anything about pediatric cardiology? So we wanted to make sure we were asking, do you know stuff about congenital heart disease? And again, we sort of divided it into anatomy and physiology, and then understanding how these play out clinically. Medical knowledge 2, catheterization. There's a couple things that are important about this. One, it's medical knowledge. And two, we emphasize diagnostic, meaning it is not the expectation, at least in terms of assessing by milestones, that fellows are able to independently do anything in the cath lab. You are still, of course, free to assess that in your program. And then medical knowledge 3, electrophysiologic testing, which basically gets at EKG testing, Holter monitor testing, and invasive EP testing. What might be absent is patient management, right? Arrhythmia drug selection. Just to address that briefly, that would be where you take the patient management and roll it into your EP evaluation, but we can get there. Before I go on, can I clarify anything about the new medical knowledge and patient care milestones? Just as a heads up, I'm not going to go as in-depth for all the systems-based practice ones. Okay, great. Moving on. And if you do have a question, just please feel free, raise your hand, turn on your camera. I'll notice anybody new. So these are the extra clinical ones. Like I said, we did not have a say in this. So even though there were some things we really talked about, should we add, should there be stuff about like fetal counseling, for example, we didn't want to add to the burden of program directors in assessing the things that, quite frankly, are harder to assess. We did think complex communication around serious illnesses, whether that's an end-of-life patient, a patient who's moving towards transplant, a patient with pulmonary hypertension, an adult congenital heart disease patient with difficult heart disease, or, for example, fetal counseling. So we did add that, but otherwise we left these the same. We were not allowed to alter them, and so we just left it that way. However, I hope you can appreciate, and if you read them on your own, that the milestone levels for each of these, it just makes more sense. Do you know about patient safety? Do you know about QI? Can you navigate patients through a system? Can you navigate patients across systems? Some of these are really hard to assess in cardiology fellowship. Population and community health, physician's role in healthcare systems, stuff like that. It can be hard. The professionalism ones, I think, are really well, nicely divided. And the communication too, right? Talking to patients and families, talking to teams. Communication around healthcare systems is a little esoteric, and then serious communications. But all in all, my feeling is these are vastly superior. What you may have not noticed, but the ACGME wants you to notice, and I would say, and Julie or David, Ellen, tell me if you disagree, is this supplemental guide. They want this to be valuable, and they stress that they wanted us to spend a lot of time on this. And it's broken down into a couple of sections. For patient care, I just picked patient management here. And these are the milestone levels. And then we gave examples that would be applicable in pediatric cardiology. And we tried to be specific to give you real world examples. This is how you may assess them. And then there's some actual references here, generally referencing the 2015 training guidelines. And most of the supplemental guide looks similar to this. We did alter specific examples in those SBP, PBLI ones. We were allowed to change the supplemental guide to be specific to cardiology. But again, we didn't address the actual milestones themselves.
Okay. That's because we weren't allowed to change the milestones, lol.
Correct.
We couldn't change that wording. Correct. So people understand that.
Okay. Yes. And as we went through it, I mean, to be clear, I think the Gen Peds people did a phenomenal job improving them. But I'm sure a lot of you who've looked at these closely, and if you've been involved in the EPA mapping, which we'll get to momentarily, when we read these, we're like, is a four even better than a three? We think a three sounds better than a four. Or like, is there even a difference between a three and a four? And so there are still those problems with milestones. But overall, I think it's an improvement. Other questions or comments about the milestones? Because the next thing is I'm moving on to entrustable professional activities. Okay. So EPAs, first big picture. I hope this is a review for most of you. If you're new to program leadership, I'm sorry, I hope this is not new to most of you. If you're new to program leadership, it might be. Subcompetencies and milestones are products of the ACGME, and that is what we are required to report. EPAs were developed about the same time, so 2012, 13-ish, and are a product of the American Board of Pediatrics. We are not required to report EPAs. However, by 2028, part of what we do when we graduate fellows will be some kind of reporting on their performance in entrustable professional activities. There's 13 of them. How that's going to shake out is not yet determined. That will roll out across the next 3 years, or about three, four years. What I have on the screen is the 6 cardiology-specific entrustable professional activities. There are 7 common subspecialty entrustable professional activities. So the same across PEDS cards, PICU, ER, HEMONC, et cetera. And it was kind of nice for us. It broke down into generally the subdisciplines of pediatric cardiology, which tends to divide up into our clinical subspecialties and importantly, how we do things in terms of rotations for our fellows. If you go to this site, there's actually 2 parts to each of these. There's the EPA itself, which elaborates on, okay, acquire the imaging skills required for all aspects of pediatric and cardiology care. And then if you click on this link, it details what those are. And then if you look on the curricular components link, it's even more detailed. What is on the ABP website now is the original mapping that took place a decade ago. Some of you guys may have been involved in that. I was involved, so I feel comfortable saying that that mapping was imperfect, to say the least. A good chunk of that was because Milestones 1.0 was esoteric, and us as humble cardiologists, even as program directors, were not educational experts in some of the PBLI, SBP, EPA subcompetencies. And so it was sort of hard to really assign. But these are the 6 cardiology EPAs. These have not changed. Imaging, cath, EP, end-stage heart failure, transplant, diagnosis and management of patients with congenital or acquired cardiac problems. So like outpatient care, inpatient care, and then kind of the same thing, but in the cardiac intensive care unit. Again, there's the 2 parts, the details of what the skills are, and then the curricular components, which go into further depth. And that's true for both the cardiology and the common EPAs. I didn't list all the common EPAs here, and there's 2 reasons for that. One, as cardiologists, we tend to be less interested. And 2, when we did our evaluations, we really only paid attention to the cardiology EPAs, but that has actually changed, and I'll show you that shortly. Here's an example of a common subspecialty EPA. Provide consultation to other healthcare providers caring for children and refer patients requiring further consultation. So mostly we're the consultant to other services, including general pediatrics. And occasionally we may need to refer to others or even other cardiac subspecialty providers. Another example is contribute to the fiscally sound, equitable, and collaborative management of a healthcare workplace, right? Totally different, but it's all things subspecialists need to do. So what has happened in EPAs? So this group you see here, consisting of program directors and non-program directors. The non-program directors are people who've had experience in EPAs, either because they've independently studied and published on EPAs, or they've sort of gotten involved for other reasons. We were tasked by the American Board of Pediatrics with 2 things. 1, now that there's new milestones, they wanted us to take them and map them to the EPAs. So for example, the EPA acquire the imaging skills necessary for cardiac care. What of the 23 ACGME competencies go into that? Well, the most obvious one is the patient care echo milestone, right? But you may want to throw something in about communication. You may want to throw something in about evidence-based practice. So we went through two cycles of a modified Delphi process and then a final review, and I'll show you what that came up with. And this is literally just finished up last week. The second thing, which was harder, was to assign a level of supervision to each EPA. The best way to think of this is if task number one is sticking the milestones under the EPA, task number two is saying, okay, we're determining how competent a fellow is in an EPA. What number will they be on those milestones? And that'll make more sense in a moment. So this is what we came up with. I'm not going to read them all. This is being recorded, and this will be made public on the ABP's website within the next, I guess, month or two. But for example, for imaging skills required for all aspects of pediatric and cardiac care, we thought there were five component parts from the ACGME milestones. Echo is obviously the big one. That was 100% of poll takers put it in there. You need to know about the anatomy, physiology, and the history of cardiac conditions. Evidence-based and informed practice, accountability and conscientiousness. Imagers are nothing if not anal, and I can say that making fun of myself. And then, of course, communication within healthcare systems. Just to jump around a little bit, diagnosis and management of patients with arrhythmias and conduction abnormalities. Well, again, can you come up with a diagnosis? Can you come up with a management plan? And the medical knowledge one only talks about testing, so you need to know about the testing. But then again, evidence-based and informed practice, interprofessional and team communication, patient and family-centered care. You get the idea. And we went through all of these. We also had to do it for the common subspecialty EPAs. The one piece of information I think we are all interested in, did we come up with similar things as pediatric emergency medicine, pediatric hematology, pediatric critical care? We don't know yet. David Turner, who is the head of competency-based education for the ABP, first of all, he's actually fantastic, and he's really appreciative of not only the time put into it, but webinars like this that allow you guys to learn more about it. He wants EPAs to be thought about as everyday professional activities, as opposed to entrustable professional activities, which is maybe less publicly consumed. Everyday professional activities. And because of that, he wanted to be like, well, what does this mean in your subspecialty? So we went through all of these and we said, you know, using population health strategies and QI to promote health and address racism, discrimination, and other contributors to inequities among pediatric population. It is a very fair point that we may have a difficult time assessing our learners this, certainly on rotations, potentially at all. We have 3 years, 4 years to figure it out. 5 years, it's 2023, sorry. 5 years to figure this out. But we thought that patient safety, QI, population and community health, physicians' roles in healthcare system, and ethics were important to this. And we actually had really robust discussions about how to do this. And again, we have all this here. The ABP put this together for us. For all of the milestones, how many EPAs did they go into? Not surprisingly, patient management went into five subspecialty EPAs and one of the common subspecialty EPAs. I believe it was consultation. Anatomy, physiology, and natural history of cardiac conditions also went into five. That's very gratifying. We all want to assess our learners on how much they know about cardiology. And I would say, very importantly, our learners want to be assessed on how much they know about cardiology. And that ended up in one EPA, and you can see it here. QI did not go into any of the subspecialty EPAs. It's not to say you don't do QI in those. It was just that in the regular course of business, on a routine basis, do you absolutely need this competency to do this EPA? I would say one of the deficiencies of the first mapping is we wanted to map everything to everything. I think it was new. We didn't really understand. It was hard to call down. Very interestingly, the only milestone that didn't get mapped to anything was well-being. And interestingly, every subspecialty had the same thing. So we're not alone there. So there was actually some validity there in the sense that people ended up with the same thing. Communication, not surprisingly, showed up a lot. Team communication was both in cardiology EPAs and common subspecialty EPAs. And again, this is all going to be public. You can see it here. This is actually a good place to pause before I get to the level of supervision. I want to make sure that I've clarified all this, explained it as well as I can. And certainly any of the people who are involved in any of the milestone formulation or EPA mapping, please feel free to weigh in your perspective on this. Okay, hearing none, I'll go forward. So this is really the question. You are granting a trainee unsupervised practice, which is always a 5 in the EPA scale. Or alternatively, you're assessing where they are in their EPAs. If you give them a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever it is, for the subcompetencies that are in that EPA, what number on the subcompetency does it line up with? And this, it's a little bit of mental gymnastics, but it's important to note that the American Board of Pediatrics thinks that unsupervised practice is what people should have when they graduate. So this is a little different than the milestones, where they sort of kind of say you should be around a 3 for general peds and a 4 for fellowship, but that doesn't really line up. And I'm sure all of you have experienced, when you read the details of the milestones, sometimes a 3 sounds really good. And that's a very competent, good teammate, good cardiologist, et cetera. Maybe some people are a 4, maybe they're not. And then when you get to, like, you know, advocacy and physicians' role in healthcare systems, you know, maybe you've said to yourself, am I even a 3? Am I a 2.5? Do I know anybody on my team who's a 4? Like, level 5 is like advocating for systems changed at the national and international level, right? And that's in the milestones, right? And there are some EPAs that are like that as well. And so what the ABP tasked us with doing is understanding that you won't be at the same place on every EPA as a trainee, and you can be a 5 in having all the imaging skills for unsupervised pediatric cardiology practice, but you don't need to be a 5 in all the component parts. So you put them all together and you're competent. And this is the part that I want to really hopefully get your attention for. What David Turner is proposing, based on evidence when people have studied the first round of EPAs, and maybe you took part in some of the SPIN studies from the APPD, is that it turns out if you have these rough mappings and you just assign a level of supervision for an EPA, so you just take the one echo EPA and you assign a level of supervision, turns out that if you would compare that to what PDs and CCCs would give the component milestones, it lines up pretty well. So David's pitch to all of you, which I am happy to share, is that if you use EPAs for fellow assessment, you're going to make your life easier. And that's what he wanted this mapping to be. So we'll get to that in a moment. So let me give you some examples. So this is something that we came up with in our group. And it's kind of cut off. There's one patient care here. There's one medical knowledge. And under this medical knowledge one, I listed all the EPAs. And again, remember, this is the inverse. This is all the EPAs that medical knowledge is mapped to. So here's the gymnastics. The idea is that for all of these EPAs, if you're a level five, what would you be on all the milestones that are mapped to it? And you may say, but maybe I would be a different level depending on the mapping. So when we initially looked at this medical knowledge one and all the EPAs in there, we thought that you might be at a different level for these, and then we ended up not filling it out. However, for practice-based learning and improvement, some EPAs are cardiology-based, and you see we gave the same level of supervision for all of them. And I'm sorry, I cut and paste the wrong thing. But when you get to the common subspecialty EPAs, we thought you need a different level of supervision. And you can see here that level of supervision 5, at least for these, never exceeds a 4, meaning you can be ready for independent practice and you're never higher than a 4. This is not all of the milestones. For some of them, a level of supervision 5, independent practice, according to the American Board of Pediatrics, is like a 3.5 on the ACGME milestones. And for some, it's a little higher, like we want you to be ethical, right? Stuff like that. And so they really wanted us to drill down. And we actually had, I think, 4 Ellen meetings, 5 meetings. We did some asynchronous work. And then we had meetings kind of talking about it. We drilled down at the half points. Just to put this in context, a level of supervision is unsupervised practice. And what that means is lack of GME supervision. It doesn't mean that you're not discussing something in surgical conference. It doesn't mean that you're not asking a colleague, hey, I got this tough case, what am I doing? That is assumed to be part of independent practice. So it's, this person is determined they no longer require GME supervision. And so if you're at that level, turns out the milestones are more aspirational. We may never reach a five. And again, we have a full spreadsheet for this, and this will all be online with the ABP. Probably not this format, but I'm personally happy to share it. So I want to pause here again, because I think this is important. It's the idea, you could say, I'm giving you a five for acquiring imaging skills. And that means you're going to get a five, you're going to get, I'm sorry, a four in practice-based learning and improvement one. If you're a four for imaging skills, you're going to get a 3.5 for practice-based learning and improvement one. Now, this shows up in a couple of different EPAs. So you'd sort of say, well, how many data points do I have? And I'm averaging that. So there's certainly imperfections, but I hope I communicated what the goal is. Any questions or clarifications for that? All right, seeing none. So I'm almost done on the information sharing portion. And then I kind of want to hear what people are doing, because if you were using standard evaluations before, what are you doing now? Have you redone your forms? Did you take your old forms but just remap milestones? Did you never use your evaluations to assign milestones? Did your CCC do it separately? So here's a little background. When all this stuff came out 10 years ago, the program directors group made standardized evaluations, and we lined them up with what are commonly rotations. We understand there's heterogeneity. The way it was really intended was a toolkit that there were like 70 questions, and you could pick and choose and line them up with where you assess this in your curriculum. We probably could have done a better job there, but at one point, about 55 or 60% of programs, maybe even two thirds, were using these in some ways. Some programs dropped them when they found better tools, and that's fine. So here's an example. This was the non-invasive imaging form. I zoomed in on a couple of these. So one question is, do you know when to get an echo? You could argue that this actually probably isn't best used on the echo rotation form. They may not be ordering the echoes. Maybe it should go in clinic, and maybe it should go on your inpatient thing, whatever. Can you apply echo as a hemodynamic monitoring tool? Can you write an echo report? Obviously, there's stuff about doing an echo on there too. And this is how we broke it down. Another example, cardiac critical care. And of course, at the time, 10 years ago, probably fewer places had a freestanding cardiac ICU than do now. And even now, not every place has a freestanding ICU. And your fellow's experience may different than my fellow's experience. And that's always a problem. We wanted this to be a toolkit, not a mandate. But some of the things that were there. Balances systemic and pulmonary circulations in pre-op single ventricles, uses temporary pacemakers, coordinates care between multiple stakeholders, functions as a member of a multidisciplinary team, right? Stuff that, you know, ICU doctors, it's part and parcel to their practice. So that's an example of what we did. This was the published work on that. So these were the old milestones. And of course, not a single one about cardiology, right? And when we mapped them, this is what we ended up with. Turns out, patient care three, develop and carry out management plans, showed up 25 times. Not surprising, because those questions ask about observable behaviors. And that was the goal. And that was the strength. Rather than ask faculty who may not be full-time educators, esoteric questions that they don't really want to think about, we're like, you see them do this. How well do they do it? And what we did when we made the forms was say, okay, what of the milestones go into that? Sort of a modified version of the EPA mapping. So diagnosis and management show up a ton. Interestingly, cost awareness came up a lot. Working interprofessional teams came up a lot. Communication came up a lot. You know, not surprise, you know, so not surprising. This is sort of a schematic of what it was. We had questions on the forms, most of which were a one-to-one mapping with an EPA, right? There's the imaging form and the imaging EPA. And that's kind of how we kept it. But we might have been better off making another cross-mapping, because a pacemaker maybe goes in the ICU one for temporary pacemakers, but maybe should show up on the EP EPA. Each question may have had multiple or a single subcompetency. And then there's other questions on the form that didn't map to anything, but we thought they were important. So here are some of the strengths and weaknesses of what we did. So the strengths are, it allowed feedback on discrete cardiology knowledge and skills. I saw my fellow do this, and I'm saying how well they did on that. It asks faculty about real-world observable behaviors. It roughly aligns with the cardiology EPAs. And then if you were reasonably MedHub savvy, it will give you a milestone report. And I'll show you what that looked like. I found this invaluable, very, very imperfect, but invaluable. Limitations. Some of the forms are too long. Some of them are too detailed. Sometimes we ask questions, and somebody who's really good at that is probably really good at another question on the form. So for example, in the ICU, someone who can manage pulmonary and systemic, balance pulmonary and systemic circulations in a pre-op single ventricle is probably really good at managing low cardiac output. So we probably maybe should have just kind of been old school and been like, how are they good at managing patients in the ICU? Maybe that's too detailed. Maybe that's too broad. I'm sorry. Maybe there's a better way to say it. But anyway, you know, we could maybe improve upon that. You saw the scale was like novice to expert, where we didn't really kind of change those scales. Maybe vignettes would be helpful. It just would have been really time consuming. It doesn't at all incorporate the cardiac subspecialty EPAs. The milestones themselves were very esoteric. We're like, what are they asking us here, right? What are they asking us? Do I really understand this? Because I don't really understand it, maybe I mapped it imperfectly, right? And then usual problems with faculty evaluation. Some people just go down the line. They don't really think about, is a fellow good at this, but needs work on this, right? I don't know if we're ever going to solve that. This is the promise of standardized evaluations in MedHub. So I know this is small. I'm sorry. I really wanted to show the whole format. But in my system, and I know others, if the faculty filled out their regular MedHub, and New Innovations does this as well, and I think eValue does it now as well. If you fill out the regular forms, MedHub aggregates all the data up in the cloud, puts together a milestone report. So I'll walk you through this. Patient care number one, this was the old one. Provide transfer of care that ensures seamless transitions. And then you have what all those levels are. This is just from the ACGME. It tells you where was this fellow last time. And then you assign them this time. On the right-hand side was, here's their average over the last 6 months, the most recent reporting period. This fellow averaged a 4.1. If I looked at all the questions that had this milestone in it, they got anywhere between a 3 and a 5. Turns out there were 6 data points and 6 individual faculty evaluators for make diagnostic and therapeutic decisions. Same thing, last time was a 3.5. This time they averaged a 3.9, so we gave them a 4. The range of answers was 2.5 to 45. 43 questions included this milestone. That shows the chart I showed you before. And 8 different faculty evaluators. So, you know, this might be subject to a lot of problems. Did we map it well, et cetera? But when you have 43 data points, even with an imperfect mapping, just like any study, if you have more data points, it improves the accuracy. And so our CCC, we would have these pulled up on a screen. We would talk about the fellows' evaluations. We would talk about our subjective impression of the fellows. And we tried to focus in on areas for improvement. You know, truth be told, I think the system overrates them in certain subcompetencies, but we really didn't worry about it unless we thought it was a problem. And so we could just go down the line. Oh, you got a 4? Great, 4. 3.9? Great, 4. And then we would really focus in when we thought there was an area for improvement. As I told the fellows, these are designed to ensure competence, not reward excellence. So this is not where we're saying awesome things about you. You'll get that elsewhere. So my thoughts on this, and I've thought about this for years, and I've thought about starting a project to revise the evaluations to make them more functional and easier. But you know, the new EPAs, the new milestones were always coming down the pike, so you didn't want to do it. Here are my thoughts. We almost never ask the subcompetencies directly. I know there are some programs that just ask subcompetencies. They're like, this is what the ACGME wants me to do. I'm putting it on the form and the faculty fill it out. I think there is a role for that. And I think there's a time where it's not helpful for learners or for faculty for that matter. I do think some subcompetencies should be broken down. I love the idea that we can assess their echo skills, but as an imager, maybe I want to be like, hey, you know, you're really good at getting the picture, but like you never optimize your image, or like your sonographer skills, scanning are really good, but I don't think you know, the Bernoulli equation or what tamponade physiology, you know, whatever. And again, yes, everybody can get very granular in their own subspecialty, but there's probably a level of breakdown that is important across the board, not for me, but because it tells learners, what do I need to really focus on, right? How do I get better? I do think there's a role there. I think that you don't want to silo the EPAs. The example of, can you use a temporary pacemaker in the CICU? You know, using the technology available in some of the residency management systems, you could probably map that to an EPA and come up with an EPA assessment. I know that's a little different than what the ABP thinks we should do. And so I think that's worth discussing. You could offer a summative subcompetency, meaning like, here's just where you are in your subcompetencies. You know, we broke down the ECHO one into these skills, but overall, this is where you are. And sometimes maybe we do take the ABP approach of just asking the EPAs. So those are some of my thoughts. I'm really curious as to what other people think. What do you think of the changes in the milestones, the EPA mapping? And then really importantly, what are you doing for milestone assignments this year? And then the question that's not on there, and I'd ask that you please email me if you're interested in working on standardized evaluations, if you think there's value for us to do that as a field. Again, none of those are mandatory. They're only designed to make people's lives easier. They're designed to be adapted, take advantage of the technology. So with that in mind, I'm going to stop sharing my screen and just invite you guys to turn on your cameras. And I'm going to try to, just because there are a lot of people here, just use the Zoom hand up. And I'll just try to facilitate a discussion. And I hope to learn from everybody. That was the cameras on invitation, if you're in a place where you can do that. To get the ball rolling, I'm curious, David, Ellen, I'm looking around. Any of you are a part of this work. Do you have anything to add about the process, what you learned doing it? Anything else I probably did not explain correctly?
No, I think you did a great job summarizing it. I learned a lot from the process. I did both this and the critical care ones, and it was a very eye-opening experience, but it's funny to see how we sort of all landed in a similar space.
Yeah, thanks, David. And I know I'm well aware of your CICU work. And given that the field of cardiac critical care is obviously a part of a cardiology fellowship, you know, if and when we move forward with a standardized evaluation, we should take that work and incorporate it, right? Even though it's not an ABP recognized EPA, the work is still valid, right? Ellen, anything to add? You're unmuted, but I can't hear you. Sorry. Anybody else, any comments to add? Let me start with the question. Is there some semblance of enthusiasm for trying to recreate the standardized evaluation toolkit and work with New Innovations, MedHub, eValu, whatever you're using to optimize the sort of under the hood technology? Carrie, thank you. Absolutely. I see nodding. Thank you, Rupali. Yes. Arwa, yes.
Yes.
Okay. And so with that in mind, what are people doing this year? Listen, ideally, we would have had this. Currently, you're collecting data on your fellows, right? In, you know, 6 weeks, we all got to sit in a room and come up with milestone assignments. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. I'm going to ask my CCC to do more work than they've had to do over the last 10 years. Like, the way we do it is we have six people there and we have 14 fellows. And we're like, each take two or three and can you fill out this form? That's what I'm going to do because the new milestones don't convert. Did anybody completely redo their evaluations, or do you have any other creative solutions?
Yeah, me and my APD spent about 10 hours remapping everything, redoing our evals in MedHub. But this would have been incredibly helpful. But I think we can still recalibrate once this work is done. But we wanted to make it as easy as possible for the CCC, especially because they're going to have to learn this whole new set of milestones. So
yeah, the good news is they are pretty straightforward. Other thoughts? What have people done? Arwa, any ideas?
So Lowell, I haven't done anything, to be honest with you. So I'm here to learn and hopefully incorporate over the next few weeks. One of the things, and I think you and I discussed this briefly, and I think it goes against everything we are trying to do, is would it work if we had one evaluation form? And if I'm an EP person, there's no reason why I can't evaluate their imaging, their patient care, their, you know, ethics, their quality, blah, blah, blah. But if I'm a echo person, I don't answer the question on EP, or I don't answer the question on intervention. And that way, you're getting more data, especially in a fellowship where they're doing a year of research and they don't have as many clinical rotations. I don't know. I'm just torn. And I just wonder if that would make it easier, even though the form may be longer, we give folks permission not to answer some of the questions. I don't know what folks think.
Other thoughts? I mean, all right, I can take a stab at it. What I'd say is I think whatever works best for, I mean, the ideal world is we come up with a list of questions. What do you see your fellow do? And I think that's really important. And, you know, again, it's labor intensive, but if we ask a specific question and we tell them, what is a five in this? I saw them, you know, do this. And again, some of that can be literally verbatim copied from the subcompetencies, right? I think accountability and conscientiousness. Why do we need to reinvent the wheel? This is something we did wrong last time, right? Just literally list it. For something like that, we're not going to do any better than they came up with, right? And the idea is we come up with a toolkit, maybe with some suggested places to put it. And then especially if we can get like MedHub, whomever, to say, hey, listen, our field came up with this. Can you work with us and get it there? And then you just click, I'm making one form with all of these. Or no, I prefer a different form for each rotation, right? I mean, I can tell you, we do schedule-based evaluations for most things, EP, cath, et cetera. We don't do schedule-based evaluations for imaging. Our philosophy was the fellows do so much nighttime scanning and so much weekend scanning and reviewing echoes with them, you know, before they go home post-call and this and that, like we just do twice a year imaging evaluations, just like we do clinic. I think it's important that every program can adapt to the nuances. And I don't think what you're saying is incompatible with individual forms. You can just say, I'm taking these questions and putting it on one form, right?
Yes, thank you. And I agree with David. I also hate long forms, but I was trying to figure out one way because, you know, to the point you just made, I could work with somebody at the weekend and see different aspects that if I was just doing their clinical form evaluation may not have being exposed to. I don't know. I like what you're suggesting. Thank you. That helps.
Yeah. The part I struggle the most with is David Turner from the ABP. Cause again, he's got data from all the spin studies of no, just ask your faculty the EPAs and then their milestones are going to be this. I don't know. That's fine. Except my main concern, well, first of all, I have a little skepticism. I'm not sure how valid all the studies are. I was in some of those studies and sometimes we're just like, oh, let's get this done. And I think everybody knows that phenomenon. But I really do think granular feedback for the fellows is really important. And the EPAs have some level of specificity, but like, how are they going to get better? And, you know, maybe a counter argument is, that's something you discuss in your semi-annual meetings with them or when they meet with an echo person or whatever. That's why I sort of want to learn from everybody else. George, I don't know if you're just being social, turning your camera on, or you had some thoughts on this you wanted to share.
Yeah, I've got two thoughts. Thanks. I was just exercising, so I'm trying to stay small on the camera.
Good for you.
So at a smaller program like ours, pretty much all of our faculty are in the CCC. So some of that granular stuff and the, you know, I'm not an echo person, but I can say what I've seen on the weekends comes out there. So it's going to be different for different size programs in that regard. The second thing is I wanted to say that me and my APD back in June went through all our individual evaluations and tried to map them, but we never did anything with that because we knew this was coming out. So we didn't change anything of what we're doing this year, but we did go through the previous milestone, mapped to the milestones the individual evaluations we had for different rotations. But again, we didn't make that useful for us.
Right. Yeah, and again, I feel bad. Two things to address Mary's question. I don't know if report card is the right way of thinking about it. We don't know. I mean, I think it's actually up to the field. I imagine David's going to come back to the SPC-TBD and ask for our guidance on how to implement this. Yes, thank you. Yes, first name, last name, happens all the time. And you know how, like, right now on the online verification we do, you know, May, June of each year, it's like, can they do this? Can they do this? Can they do this? And it's like, yes, no. I don't know if we are going to have to be like, can you confirm they're a five or give them a number? What are the consequences of saying they're not a five? Because again, a five is not aspirational. A five is unsupervised practice, so I don't know. But I think it's going to fall on us as program directors to complete an EPA assessment of them. I don't know if that, goes anywhere other than the ABP to allow them to sit for the boards. Megan, you had your hand up before.
Yeah, hi. Sorry, I'm driving in the mountains, and so I'm not sure if I have service, but I'm Megan Sue. I'm the APD at Colorado. I've just been in this role for a year. And like David, we just revamped all of our evaluations to be rotation specific and shortened them to ask more specific questions to the rotation so we would get more valuable feedback from faculty that was then, you know, more actionable for the fellows. And we haven't incorporated EPAs at all into our eval. So I'm very curious how others have done that and would love if, you know, people would be willing to maybe share some of those so we could get start, you know, incorporating EPAs into the evals as well.
Any ideas on the sort of crosstalk between evaluation questions? I think we're all pretty comfortable with evaluation questions and milestones, whether you ask the milestone verbatim or you have a question and you say, you know, these milestones go into that. You know, Megan, I'll just start off by saying, in my mind, the only way it's been done is that the standardized evaluation form, given that it's like imaging and the cardiology EPAs are, you know, imaging, that's the map. Right? It's not perfect, but it's a crude mapping, right? All these questions are a part of the EPA. I can tell you that I know the under the hood system in MedHub pretty well. And you can actually click, it goes to this milestone, this domain, this EPA. Like, you have that ability. And MedHub can put together awesome reports. And I actually really believe there's value there. But let's be realistic, who has the time to do all that to the best of its abilities, right? And that's where I think if we, you know, put our heads together, we can really come up with it. I mean, I say that, but then of course, who has time for more meetings and Zooms? But at least we can do it together. All right, so here's what I'm taking out of this right now. Oh, Josh, go ahead.
Hey, sorry, to build off that a little bit, I'm obviously new in my position as well at a new program. So we just made our eval since we haven't had a fellow yet. And I guess kind of really building on that last question. So we were specifically told by the university not to make the questions competency directly, because that was kind of my first thought. At the same time, to try and make this ease, I did write under them, you know, kind of mapping them to the competencies and the EPAs. I guess in the presentation was great, but still a little confused on how both the ABP and the ACGME want you to take that data from this evaluation that may or may not be direct and translate it to their wording separately. Is that purely our interpretation? That's purely our, you know, way of saying this is what we think for the fellow, or is there supposed to be a standard way that we're translating? Again, obviously you had a great graph translating the competencies to the EPAs, but translating what we at an individual level are doing for each of them.
Right. No, it's a great question. The well, first of all, the ABP does not require anything about EPAs yet. Nothing. We've never had to do anything. They're out there. People have studied them, but you are not required to send anything to the ABP either on a semi-annual basis or as a summative evaluation about EPAs. That's not until 2028, but we will, right? The strength of EPAs, though, is people have studied them. There's all the spin studies. There's some other ones coming out. So there's actually some, you know, educational science behind it. In terms of the ACGME, every December and every June, we have to fill out it used to be 21 and now it's going to be 23. It's a little more individual subcompetency evaluations for every fellow. Right. And they don't care where we get the data from. Your GME or your university may have their preferences, but the ACGME does not care. It is just your role in the common program requirements that a clinical competency committee comes up with an assessment and you upload it. And that's it. So we want to make it both meaningful and, let's be honest, easy.
All right. I guess this is the hard part, you know, again, being new, but listening to this, it seemed like there was almost somewhere that I had missed where I was supposed to be taking it from. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, wait, that's not what we had. So I apologize for taking everyone's time then.
It's okay. I mean, and to be honest with you, there's a world of difference between milestones 1.0 and 2.0. In milestones 1.0, they were the same for every pediatrics practice, gen peds, developmental peds, cardiology. There was literally no difference, zero. And, you know, that's why I'm sure in your semi-annual meetings, it was the same as mine. You're like, all right, I'm required to go over your milestone evaluation. Here it is. I'm like, here's how you are on cost effectiveness. I actually care about that one, so I shouldn't make fun of it. But you know what I'm saying, right? Like, and it's like, do the fellows really care? They want to know, how am I in the cath lab, right? Do I know anything about cardiology, right? So I do think the new milestones are better. Listen, as a crude assessment, I think you could start with just asking the new milestones, right? How am I at diagnosing patients, managing patients, organizing a complex service, cath, EP, imaging, like whatever. We did, I should say, talk about stuff like other diagnostic testing. Do we need to assess how well they look at X-ray MRI exercise testing? We decided that the milestones will never be comprehensive about everything a practicing pediatric cardiologist needs to do. So we had to make cuts and we're like, yes, we want you to be able to do exercise testing. I wish I could do exercise testing better. I think Cam Hebson was here before, but I'm not, you know, but like we just can't capture everything. And cause you know, you go down the rabbit hole, but yeah, they don't care where you get it from. So here's what I'm taking away from this. Everybody's kind of in the same boat for this year. Some people have gone so far as to remap their evaluations, but there's at least a half dozen people, and I presume more because I've seen a lot of black boxes, would be like, yeah, a common toolkit would be great. So obviously, we're not going to have anything for this reporting cycle. And to be honest with you, I don't think we'll have anything for the next reporting cycle either, June of 2024. I always have these grand plans that between January and March, with, you know, ADS and recruiting and onboarding and graduation, like done and not started yet, how much I'm going to get done. And then I'm always slapped with reality that, oh yeah, I have to take care of patients. But I do think we can get a lot of work done in that time period. So what I would like is if we could put together a working group and get in a groove, a combination of Zoom meetings and asynchronous independent work, we could come up with revised standardized evaluations with no preconceptions about what they might look like by June of 2024, so that the next academic year, July 1st, you can roll them out in your program. And therefore, a year from now, December 2024, you'd have some automated tool. That would be what I think is a little aspirational, but if we stick to it, we can do it. Julie, happy to help, thank you. That would be what I would propose. I want to respect everybody's time. We can end 5 minutes early. First, I want to invite any last thoughts or any, you know, different interpretations about where the temperature is of the room. Thank you, Carrie.
Okay, now can you guys hear me?
Yes, excellent.
Okay. So what are people going to do in the meantime then? What are we going to do for December and the next two cycles if we don't have to? Try maybe asking the milestones, and that's how we did it originally. And it was awful with the original milestones, but I do agree the new milestones are more user-friendly and our faculty probably will be able to use them and give us some valuable feedback with that. But I really liked the standard evaluations that we had where the questions really were more EPA based and they were more practical, and our faculty liked those kind of questions better, and then mapping those to the milestones. So I definitely would like to help make that work again.
I should write down. I don't want to make anybody who just volunteered in the chat have to email me. But seeing nothing around my office. I'm going to put my email address in the chat. I will try to remember. Do me a favor. Just send me an email because I'll be able to take notes that way. And then I'll try to start organizing stuff November, December. No work to be done. We're all busy enough after the match with semi-annuals and evaluations and all that kind of stuff. But get things going so we can hit the ground running in January. We'll try to maybe set up like a every other week working group just to keep things going. I find that's pretty helpful, even if we don't make progress, just to keep the momentum going. All right. Thank you guys so much for joining. I'm really happy to see a good turnout. This was recorded and will be available. And I hope to see a bunch of you at the AAP, either in person on Friday at our meeting, or we're going to jury rig a remote option. We technically don't have Zoom, but I'll bring my laptop. We'll hold up a camera. We'll make it work. We'll make it work. All right. Thank you guys.
Thank you, Lowell.